Let me know when you're ready.
Call to order council meeting for August 25th. If everyone would stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Remain standing. We have a roll call.
Vice President Brown.
Here.
President Chapman.
Here.
Mr. Clark.
Here.
Ms. Morris.
Here.
Ms. Rhodes.
Here.
Mr. Salter.
Here.
Mr. Sebring.
Here.
Mayor Yoakum.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring to adopt the agenda as presented.
Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Chapman.
Yes.
Mr. Clark.
Yes.
Ms. Morris.
Yes.
Ms. Rhodes. Mr. Salter.
Yes.
Mr. Sebring.
Yes.
The agenda is adopted by a vote of 7-0. Next is approval of the minutes of the August 11th meeting.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rhodes to approve the August 11th meeting minutes.
Mr. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Chapman.
Yes.
Mr. Clark.
Yes.
Ms. Morris.
Yes.
Ms. Rhodes. Mr. Salters.
Yes.
Mr. Sebring.
Yes.
Okay, move on to petitions, memorials, remonstrances.
Mr. Mayor, I've got several announcements. First of all, for the council, you've all received correspondence at the Indiana Association of Cities and Towns annual conference will be September 9 and 11 or through 11 in Fort Wayne. And so any member who plans to attend, if you could see me after the meeting and we can work on registrations. Of course, this is the meeting that the city of Vincennes will be honored with the Community Achievement Award for the Rainbow Beach Family Aquatic Center. So just see me after the meeting if want to attend. Also, just before coming over here, the Knox County Public Library asked me to announce that they are going to have the authors of the book, The Importance of 80-20 Landlording, speak tomorrow night at 6:30. And apparently this is not just a benefit to landlords, but has some good general rules of the road for anyone. As an example, 80% of the problems are usually caused by 20% of the people, and that applies to lots of things across the board. So if you want to attend that, 6:30 tomorrow night, Knox County Library. Want to remind everybody the reception for Tom Beasy is August 28, 4 to 6 p.m. at the Knights of Columbus. Of course, Tom has served us with distinction for 44 and a half years at the Vincennes Water Utility, so please plan to stop by there. United Way kickoff is this Wednesday at 5 p.m. at Old National Bank on the main floor, so come on out and learn about the good work of the United Way. And we note with sadness the passing of Dale Brockman, who was a longtime member, I believe, past president of the Police Merit Board, a very much a community leader and helped many, many causes throughout his life. His memorial service will be Saturday at 1 p.m. at St. John's United Church of Christ with visitation from 10 a.m. until time of the service at 1. So our prayers are certainly with Dale Brockman's family at this time. And last, I want to announce with some pride that the Indiana Emergency Response Conference presented its annual awards on August 22nd, and the Fire Instructor of the Year Award was presented to Lou Scarpellini, a professor emeritus at Vincennes University, and the Fire Officer of the Year Award was presented to our own James Beeman to the Vincennes Fire Department. Jim is also the clinical coordinator of VU's EMS program. And so these are awards that certainly bring distinction to our community and indicate a high level of performance and dedication of service to the community. And so we salute both Lou and particularly Jim Beeman. And I think that is all the announcements I have, except just one item of correspondence. I don't know if everybody got this letter or whether I just got it as president, but Mr. Jay Eccles, Eccles or Eccles, I don't know which one, lives on Thompson Drive, but he is writing asking that we keep the trains from blowing their horns going through town. So if you did not get a copy of this letter, glad to share it with you. But he cites some other large cities that apparently they've established quiet zones and kept the trains from blowing their horns. That's news to me, but see that I have it. That's all the announcements I have.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, we'll move on to committee chair reports. Seeing none, we'll move on to report of any city officers. We'll move on to old business. First up is Ordinance 21-2014, additional appropriation from Knox County City and Town Court Cost of Vincent's Police Department, non-reverting law enforcement, continuing education. Second reading was your last meeting.
I'm going to ask if this matter, this is tabled currently, has that been resolved or do we need to continue with it being tabled? Police Chief will tell us that.
Dusty Luking, Vincent's Police Department. I did have an opportunity to speak with Charlie at the State Board of Accounts, and it's been resolved, and we're told to go ahead and file that claim, so we can go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, hearing that news, I would move that we have a third reading of Ordinance 21-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilman Sebring, to have third and final reading of Ordinance 21-2014.
Ordinance 21-2014, additional appropriation ordinance making formal parts sections 1, 2, and 3, $64,907.
Any discussion?
Brown?
Yes.
Chatton?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salter?
Yes.
Sebring?
Yes.
Okay. Third and final reading of Ordinance 21-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is Ordinance 28-2014, additional appropriation from General Fund to Board of Works and Public Safety for street repairs. Your first reading was August the 11th.
Mayor, we have a second reading of Ordinance 28-2014.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have second reading of Ordinance 28-2014.
Ordinance 28-2014, additional appropriation ordinance omitting formal parts section 1, 2, and 3, $121,200.25. Board of Works.
Any discussion?
Streets are looking a lot better. I was talking to somebody this morning and just a lot better than they did right after the snow come off the ground. So good that we were able to target some funds for that.
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salter?
Yes.
Yes.
Second reading of Ordinance 28-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0.
Mayor, I move we have a third reading of Ordinance 28-2014.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of Ordinance 28-2014.
Ordinance 28-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing section 1, 2, 3, $121,220.
Discussion?
Mr. Mayor, one point. Let the record show that we did have a public hearing at 5:45 and no one spoke for or against. Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Okay, third and final reading of Ordinance 28-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is Ordinance 29-2014, additional appropriation from EDIT. Your first reading was August the 11th.
I move we have a second reading of Ordinance 29-2014.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have second reading of ordinance 29-2014.
Ordinance 29-2014, additional appropriation ordinance omitting formal parts, section 1, 2, and 3, $30,432.85.
Any discussion?
Oh, excuse me, yes, we did have a public hearing on this ordinance as well. No one spoke for or against.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Yes.
Second reading of ordinance 29-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0.
Oh, yes, it is time for that. Move we have a third reading of ordinance 29-2014.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 29-2014.
Ordinance 29-2014, additional appropriation ordinance 1, 2, and 3, $1,430.
Discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, third and final reading of ordinance 29-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next is ordinance 30-2014, additional appropriation from promotion of the city donations. First reading was August the 11th.
Mayor, move we have second reading of ordinance 30-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Clark, to have second reading of ordinance 30-2014.
Ordinance 30-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3, $86,000.
Discussion?
Mr. Mayor, a public hearing was held on this ordinance as well. As at 5:45, no one spoke for or against. Nothing. I would call for the question.
Mr. Brown? Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Sorry. Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Okay, second reading of ordinance 30-2014 passes by a vote of 7-2.
Mr. Mayor, I move we have third reading of ordinance 30-2014.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 30-2014.
Ordinance 30-2014, additional appropriation ordinance, sections 1, 2, and 3, for $86,000.
Discussion?
Go over the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Third and final reading of ordinance 30-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0. Moving to new business, first is ordinance 31-2014. Ben Roger, Council's Financial Consultant, City Financial Future Options to Stabilize Revenue.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we have a first reading of ordinance 31-2014. Before I ask for a second for this, I want to just state that I'm asking for this to be adopted on first reading tonight so that it can get the full consideration of the council. And with the understanding, like we do with Area Plan Commission recommendations, that vote on first reading does not reflect what your final decision may be at future meetings. But I think that this matter deserves the full study of the council. Over that reason, I make a motion for first reading of ordinance 31-2014, and we'll have a fuller explanation with our financial consultant once we get this on the floor.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman clerk to have first reading of ordinance 31-2014.
Ordinance 31-2014, an ordinance of the Common Council of Vincennes, just great economic development.
Discussion.
I think this would probably be a good time to have Ben come up and give us sort of an analysis of this ordinance and give us the opportunity to ask him questions following that.
Okay. First off, I want to say why we're talking about this. As many of you may or may not know, back in 2003, there was an edit rate that was enacted by the county to pay for the county jail. That edit rate was supposed to last as long as enough revenue was collected to pay for the jail. Recently, we were looking into it, and we determined that enough revenue should have been collected through the end of this year to pay for the jail. And therefore, by law, that edit rate should go away. Now, under the scenario that's being proposed to you this evening, part of that edit rate, part of the savings would go to pay for another edit, and the other part of the savings would go directly to taxpayers. I guess you have a handout. Evening.
I'm not sure that it's in mine, but hang on. Okay. Well, it's on here? Oh, okay. All right, so now we're on the same. Everybody have this then? Okay, thank you.
Okay, now under the scenario that's being proposed with this ordinance, part of that savings would go to pay for another edit rate. And you can see I broke out Vincennes City's share of that revenue. It would be $440,000 a year. The other part of the savings would actually go directly to taxpayers. You go to such a hypothetical scenario, I guess, below at the bottom of that, and you can see a taxpayer household has Indiana taxable income of $50,000 would actually have $50 of savings compared to what they're paying this year in tax under the proposed scenario.
So just to clarify that, if the council were to adopt this, this taxpayer would have $50 in savings at the
yes.
end of the whole process of the jail tax being ended and this tax being in. Okay.
That's correct.
So
yeah.
Make sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. Because the jail tax would go away, and that's a rate of 0.15 of that to go would go to fund this new edit, which would give the city the other 0.1 would go directly to taxpayers. And just to clarify, it would be the city council would need to act on this ordinance, but also that somebody else would need to act since the co-ed council that would have to approve this. Somebody, another unit would have to be on board then as well.
And the reason for that being is the as currently constituted, the city population is not a majority of the total population of the county. So
that's correct, yeah. It's about 48% of the entire county. So it's most of it, but not all of it. So I guess also why are we talking about this? I guess if you recall several meetings back, we had a projection that was sent out earlier this year. And also on your information should have been attached to a general fund projection. And if you look at the excess revenues over expenditures this year, we're showing a deficit of $223,922. And it's actually going to projected to go up based on the normal spending increases from year to year to $1.1 million in 2015. That's an annual budget deficit. The reason being is because of that change in assessed property values increased the amount of revenue that the city is losing as a rate. And if you look at the bottom line, you can start seeing projected deficits in the general fund in these out years. Now, there is a rainy day fund balance, so there's things that can stabilize revenue short term, but long term, either need to start identifying new revenue sources or cut spending, or a combination of the two. Are there any questions or?
Well, the figures you're showing for the revenue raised by the city, if this was adopted, $440,431, would cover next year's projected deficit plus would be $100,000 roughly additional dollars.
That's correct.
But in 2016, according to projections, still have a problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is a long-term problem. It was whenever the assessed property values changed, it increased the amount of lost revenue by nearly $1 million. This was sprung upon us after the budget was adopted last year. So now is the time to react. So it's... I guess trying to figure out where identify efficiencies and
in terms of why this is being presented to the council at this time.
Yeah, the reason why it's presented at this time is because there are statutory deadlines upon which a council would need to act before the ordinance would be adopted. Procedurally, this council would need to act by the first meeting in September. And then from there, that ordinance would go to the county auditor, who would then send it to the other units, other cities and towns, and then the county. And that those units would have 30 days to vote on that, whether they wanted to go through with this or not.
So that's the reason it's being presented now, is because it is...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, you need about a 45 to 60-day window to really get this thing.
So if it wasn't presented at this meeting, if it wasn't adopted on first reading at this meeting... then the only option we would have, if this would be something the council would want to pursue, we would have to suspend our rules or do all kinds of things that we don't normally want to do. So that is the reason for the timing at this point.
Why did we wait till the last minute again? We've done that with every idea that Ben has brought before us, and we've waited till the last minute. Why have we done this again?
Well, the timing is mine. I think that we have had, if you will recall, the council has had his financial projections for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the option of any council member to bring this up at whatever schedule they want. It is being brought up in a timely fashion to deal with it. And I'll take the credit or the blame for the timing, as well as take full credit for the introduction. I'd ask no other member to, in advance, to support this or co-sponsor it, but I think that it is being presented in a timely fashion to deal with it. We pass it on first reading at this meeting, and we have ample time to have whatever meetings you want to discuss it. So I don't see it as last minute at all.
I mean, I can see what Councilman Sebring is saying. I know this has happened a couple times with us where we've kind of put our backs up against the deadline. And, Ben, what did you say the deadline for this would be the beginning of September?
You would need to act by probably mid-September. The deadlines to get it to the state would be November 1, but other units would need to vote on it as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad we have the information now, but you know, to make a decision now if this is something we should go forward with, I mean, I'm more comfortable of having it, looking it through, discussing the questions amongst ourselves, and you know, with Ben, if we do have any further questions before, hey, here's the information tonight, Ben's here tonight to discuss it, and we got to make a decision tonight to do it.
Well, no, you're doing nothing different than what we routinely do year in and year out with Area Plan Commission decisions, where you vote on first reading, and your vote merely indicates that you want to consider it. You're not making a decision as to what your final decision will be. During the interim, council can meet as many times as it wishes in the public notice law. Meet with whoever you want, receive information from Ben as frequently as you wish. And then at our next meeting, we will make an informed decision. As I say, the important figures are the ones that he presented some time ago and the council members have had on the financial projections of the city. That is really the more important matter to consider. This is merely a strategy to deal with it, and as you can see from those figures, this really stabilizes our situation in terms of providing city services, in terms of providing employment for our emergency responders and our other city services throughout next year, and gives us about $100,000 additional that we would not have had, all of which would give us hopefully time to prepare for 2016, which has only challenges. So I think the council has had the important piece of information for some time, and I think this is being presented on a timely basis to give us time to fully consider whether you're for or against it.
Well, I understand
there's
that.
There's other options that we've discussed in terms of financing that we've heard, you know, at some length, the strategies to have public donations deal with this. Council's dealt with at length whether good public policy for or against to change our trash collection system to deal with the long-term funding issues. So I would argue the council has been dealing with these issues for some time, and we certainly have ample time to deal with this issue in the next few weeks.
I mean, but with it being the 25th today, our next meeting is the 8th. I mean, that kind of, you know, that's mid-September before our next meeting would be the 22nd of September at that rate. I mean, it does kind of put us in a situation. We know we've looked at the projections. We've seen what's happened, and we see what's going on. I know that we've tried to, you know, we want to throw everything we can at the wall. We want to try to figure out anything we possibly can. But I almost kind of feel like we're being pushed in this direction. I'd like some more time to look at it.
No members being pushed. You're just putting it in reference. You're almost just putting it in committee to study. So I don't see any push there. We've known the financial situation of the city for some time. This is being presented as an option to stabilize city finances throughout next year. And
but Ben, don't we have to get a nut like Bicknell? Don't they have to go in with us?
Yeah,
and we had to get their okay by that date also.
Oh no, they would have 30 days.
They'd have 30 days, extra days.
Yeah. So if you'd want to get Bicknell or somebody to vote right away, that would buy you some more time.
But we have to approve it, yeah.
So somebody would need to approve it by mid-September, whether that's Bicknell or city.
If somebody has to trigger the discussion. It's not a certainty that the tax would be adopted at all. Obviously, there has to be another entity that would partner with the city. And everyone's financial situation is different, but most municipalities are facing some very difficult financial challenges that have been created, frankly, by the state of Indiana and thrust upon us. But we have to look at all the options. I mean, it was said earlier that we have to look at throw everything against the wall and see if it sticks. Well, that's basically what we're doing. We're putting this out there for public discussion, and so I don't see it as a rushed decision. I mean, it may be relatively rushed in terms of the way city council has operated, and we debated for months, I guess, on some issues and don't seem to get anywhere. So I think this kind of a schedule perhaps will help us to make an informed decision on a timely basis. But
so the discussion would need to be initiated by what meeting?
I guess with this council, something would need to be, you'd want to look at it in the meeting on September 8th, and then if there's no decision at that time, maybe get a special meeting on the push it much farther back, then you're kind of running up against some deadlines.
All right, and this would be to replace, like, the jail would be 0.25, and this would replace what the jail was?
It'd be a 0.15 of that 0.25 would be replaced. The remaining 0.1 would actually be a cut and reduce tax rates.
Ben, the projected 2016 budget is showing an end operating balance in the general fund of a deficit of about $1.6 million, which is a considerable amount, even from the projected deficit for 2015. Are you seeing this trend in other municipalities and counties throughout the state for the 2016 budget being such a considerable amount due to the assessments?
I guess what based on my experience, Vincennes is a unique situation where property values dropped by 15% this year. I hadn't seen anybody else is property values drop like that. For instance, whenever the state recommends you set your budget, they say be conservative, and they say assume a 10%. And so this is beyond safe.
So why are property values dropping 15% in Vincennes when everything else, from milk, butter, eggs, cars, houses, everything else, is going up?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you recall Kathy Lane's presentation to us earlier in the year, what was it, $60 million of that reduction, at least that's what topped my head, $60 million of the reduction in assessed valuation was the result of an error in assessments in the past, where when we created the TIF district, the personal property of businesses was supposed to have been shifted from the general fund over to the Redevelopment Commission to spend.
Mm-hmm.
And that was supposed to have happened many years ago. An error in the assessor's office, they did not make that shift. And Kathy has spent a good deal of her time in office correcting mistakes of the past. One of the corrections that she has made is to shift that quite correctly. But in doing so, our general fund, or our assessed valuation, has taken a hit. Now, that's RDC is, you know, they're sitting pretty good because of it. But that's part of it. That's part of it, is that mistake of many years ago that has now come home to roost, and that could account, I think, for a portion of that.
Yeah, it does. I was looking back at the projections previously. It was slight deficits in out years, but nothing like what you're seeing in front of you now. But most of that has to do with what you're saying as far as it.
There may be some changes that in terms we can make if given another year to buy us some time that, who knows, maybe annexation could help bridge some of that gap. Annexation study underway, so we'll see what results that may produce. But I would suggest that we need some time to come up with a financial stability plan, and I think that this could be one element of that. It could be the whole element in terms of next year's financial stability, year 2016 and beyond. Then we have to come up with additional strategies, I guess. But based on your observations around the state, because you deal with other communities. A lot of communities are doing all sorts of different things to deal with the property tax cap issue and this business personal property tax issue, which I continue to be quite the pessimist on, but I think in this case maybe pessimism is realism. I don't think the governor's through, and I don't think the legislature is through on that front. All the indicators show me we could take a hit on that. So I think we need strategies to bring financial stability to the city. And then the bottom line is, it is to keep our emergency responders employed, to keep them in the equipment they need, to keep the the parks operating, the cemetery operating, and all the other city services. I think that it is essential that the council at least adopt this first reading, but we will then have a time to consider this versus other options. If the council, as we approach that September 8th meeting, still feels like they need more time, we could always, through public notice, change our September 8th meeting to September, other date before that 15th deadline. There's nothing wrong with that. That's procedurally acceptable. As long as we do it with plenty of public notice. But I think that it is incumbent upon Vincennes to be the leader in triggering this conversation. There has to be someone to trigger this conversation in Knox County, whether it's decided for or against. I mean, it would seem to me irresponsible to not at least consider this as a method to bring financial stability to the city.
My concern is that we, over the course of the past term, we had at least four opportunities where we could get more money for the general fund for pennies on the dollar through capital development funds, or cumulative capital development funds, excuse me, property tax error corrections and all that. And all but one time, these were voted down because it was either too late in the game or because a phone call came in at the last second saying, hey, we don't need this. So why should it not be any different? That's all I ask. I believe what I'm trying to get at is we've been trying to shore up this damage now for almost 4 years and have been getting the door slammed in our face every time we turn around. And here we are again, up against the wall, and expected to vote for it.
Well, my two cents would be, I mean, the timing should be irrelevant, because if we have the need. My question might be, you know, why don't we take the full bag of whatever shift from the jail to for revenue in the county. You know, we are giving the taxpayer a break, and we kind of suffer for it. So with the circuit breaker not ever going away, these are the taxes that, you know, is going to be the revenue for the city. Any kind of other little you know, revenue ideas outside taxing, they're just going to be band-aids. So I think we need to look at something responsible now.
What Councilman Sebring was bringing up, and it was we had this discussion a couple years ago where, Ben, you were highly involved, Clerk Treasurer was involved with shoring this up, and we were led to believe that there wasn't a problem, and we even had these projections then, but we were led to believe that there wasn't a problem, and now there's a problem almost overnight, right? I'm just saying it wasn't a problem, now it's a problem,
right? Since your last budget, whenever the assessed valuation went down is when the problem has occurred, and to me, it doesn't hurt to pass this first reading to look at it.
Right.
Instead of just killing tonight, at least it gives you a couple more weeks to actually look at it, even if you're going to vote it down, and better inform yourself.
Well, I think the record clearly shows for a number of years that the city council has been very reluctant to raise taxes and fees. It's not something, ever one of these questions comes before, whether it's this council or even councils before that I've served on, it has, no one has pumped at the bit to raise taxes or fees. And I think that's probably a good thing. So I can share the frustration of some council members that are now faced with this. But, you know, it's our job to manage the city. And I don't think that you can look at the financial projections that we have before us and have had for some time and not come to the conclusion that I just don't think the city can go forward and without drastic changes in the services we provide unless we come up with additional revenue sources. Now, I don't know of too many revenue proposals that have been put before us for serious consideration that will both stabilize our finances and, in terms of the net impact on individual taxpayers, will result in a reduction of that net impact on the taxpayers.
I've got another question, Ben. Okay, with EDIT and COA, there's a maximum percentage that you can have of the two. LOIT is outside of that maximum percentage, isn't it?
Yeah, there's LOITs that are outside of...
Outside of the 1.25, right? You hear that? You. I just wanted to make sure you heard that. That LOIT does not count toward that 1.25% maximum income tax. LOIT is outside of the 1.25%. No, LOIT. LOIT. No, LOIT is one tax.
Actually, technically, they're all LOITs, but you're right. Commonly, the LOITs are...
Yeah. Right, but LOIT is basically the third one, isn't it? You've got your CEDIT and your COIT, and you've got your LOIT.
Actually, they're all technically local option, but what you're saying is commonly the third option is that LOIT, which is a tax freeze type of LOIT and things of those nature, and those are outside of that freeze. So
they're outside of the 1.25. That was right. Yeah, they go for emergency services. And that's why typically, and that's why they moved it outside of that 1.25% max. Right. Well, fire and police.
Mr. President, if I may, LOIT is like McDonald's. You can go to McDonald's and get different types of hamburger. You go into the LOIT system, local income option tax. You take COIT, you take CAGIT, you take EDIT. You can't go out and buy a LOIT, but you can get those programs that are in there. That's what the LOIT program is.
Turn off that debate, but let me just bring up another issue and put it on the table. Aside from the assault on local municipal government by the state of Indiana, and I think that's the proper term for it, assault in terms of our ability to finance ourselves, even if you were to take that off the table, and let's say we had stable revenue and we're doing okay. I would ask this question. For a community such as ours that has two of its largest employers being nonprofits, I think if you go to the top five employers, it may even be three out of the top five, sizable amount of the property, in terms of the property tax, that's not being taxed. If you were to take a community such as ours and just ask this question, what would be a better way to finance municipal government, property tax, or income tax. Take all the other issues off the table. Just that question. Would you be better off being more dependent on income tax or property tax, given the unique set of variables, well, it's not unique, but distinct set of variables we have in Vincennes? What would be your suggested answer?
My personal idea is with the property taxes, if places are exempt, you're not going to get any property tax revenue for the services that you're providing. And if you get revenue, you would need another source of income tax to receive revenues for.
Because of the the distinct set of variables we have within our city limits, a high proportion of our taxpayers are currently at or past the cap. Is that so? As an example, I'm at the cap. So if we raise property taxes, I, as a taxpayer, will not. I'm already at the cap that's imposed by the state of Indiana.
That's correct.
So when we continue to be reliant upon the property tax versus becoming more dependent on an income tax, in terms of looking at the impact on individual taxpayers, a taxpayer like me at the cap, not impacted, but people perhaps at a lower income would be impacted because they're not at the cap yet. So just in terms of fairness, putting everything else off the table, it would seem to make sense to become more dependent on income tax versus property tax. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Each of you have your own opinion, so I don't want to.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not the one to ask that. Maybe I'm just asking that kind of as a argumentative point to the body. But let me just say this, too. As you start to talk about taxes, whatever kind of taxes they are, the issue also becomes Vincennes University, Good Samaritan Hospital, large entities such as ACARC, which are non-profits, obviously, and don't pay a property tax. If you look at the budgets of a Good Samaritan Hospital, a Vincennes University, even a KCARC, although I'm not as familiar with their budgets, but if you look at all the entities that I've named, a very high percentage of their total budget is salaries, because they're, well, with the exception of KCARC that has some industrial aspects, the hospital and the university are not producing widgets or automobiles that have high external costs. They're basically paying people to provide different services. So in answer to the question of coming up with a fairer distribution of taxation, it would make sense in my mind to go to an income tax where you're taxing Vincennes University employees, you're taxing Good Samaritan Hospital employees, ACARC employees, which is largely, in essence, where those budgets go. That narrative.
You know, I look around the room, and the council included, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people in this whole room. 7, counting the city attorney. 7 people in this whole room that work at a place that pays property taxes. He doesn't, Shirley's retired. Well, Chuck does, but it's not in the city. And you two, you work in businesses, we all work in businesses that don't pay property taxes, which is a huge, huge, huge part of this town. And I agree, we've been hitting the property taxpayers extremely hard, but when you really just stop and look at it, you know, we're not getting the benefits of the FAR Best and the FIA other than income taxes. We're getting the benefits from in that perspective, but we're not getting it in terms of the property tax revenue. So I understand your argument. I've been down this road before, and right, Doe?
Yeah.
We've been down this road before, and it's a complicated issue. The state is they're not even shy about saying they're trying to shift local operations to be funded by income taxes instead of property taxes.
Oh yeah, I mean,
these two guys in the front row, they don't want their property taxes going up anymore. They're probably paying a pretty good chunk right now on their business, right? So I mean, it's a weird dilemma to be in. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Well, again, all I'm asking tonight is that the council adopted on first reading, meaning that you're willing to at least consider it. That doesn't mean that any vote should be interpreted as being your final decision, but that's what I'm asking, in addition to encouraging everyone to ask Ben all the questions that they have about it available.
And if you have, I have my card if anybody needs my number.
I just want to clarify. So what we would be doing is we had a tax, and we'd be replacing it with a smaller tax. Correct?
Yeah.
All right. Because I just want to, I mean, when these discussions that we have with ourselves, and obviously we'll have with people throughout, I mean, that's something that obviously transparency would be a good thing, that, hey, we're going from the jail tax. All right. That would be a burden that would be alleviated, but then in return we wanted to do this. It's smaller, but this is the route that we are discussing. Correct?
That's the way I interpret it. At the end of the day, if we would adopt this, and if we would find a partner out there in the county willing to go along with us to get this enacted, at the end of the day, the net impact on taxpayers would be a reduction in their income tax.
Doe, did you want to approach the podium?
Old Hall, 1406 Minute. Well, I'm not opposed to this concept, if and when it's needed, but there's some factors here that y'all are not doing, and I think you got a little off subject on the needs of this and that. You're arguing more or less, should you raise the tax or shouldn't you? This edit tax is a jail tax. Mr. Culp was on the council. That council at that time promised people in Knox County, we will pay off these bonds early. It's in their ordinance. We will pay off these bonds early. That tax will be removed. Now, you want to come back, the city council, rather than the court council, and you want to come back and say, well, we're only going to remove part of that tax. Well, I agree with the concept and the argument between the edit tax and the property taxes. I agree with you, Scott. And Mayor, like you said, you'd matter Dwayne maxed out on property tax, but that doesn't have anything to do with this. What it comes to is y'all need money. You're going on projections that you needed money. You was going to need it this year. You didn't. But you had these projections in time. You turned down $350,000 that wouldn't increase taxes on anyone, maybe a couple that's under the cap, but it was through redistribution, that's correct. But you said no, you turned down $350,000 a year, presented by Mr. Culp and Mr. Rager. $152,000, Mayor, you was one of them said you didn't want it. Mr. Salters and Mr. Brink, or Mr. Brink was sitting there, okay, said no. Okay, we don't want it on the agenda. You voted it down. Each time that these men have come up, we don't want to get any money without raising taxes, you said no. Now you want to take a tax that was implemented by mandate from the state. We had to build a jail. The county council passed the edit tax. They made the promise they would remove the edit tax when those bonds were paid, when they had the funds. As of December 31st, they're going to have the funds. They may have them right now. But they're going to remove that edit tax. That means everybody that works that's got taxable income loses a 0.25% of their tax bill. That's what they promised them. And now it's coming that you passed up all this money you had the opportunity to, and now you're saying, oh, but wait a minute, we don't care, we want an income tax, although it's minimal, we want that on people from the county, and we're going to take it to the court. I believe that you've got the cart before the horse. The concept is a good idea. The income is a good idea. You've got property tax caps. People are up against them. That's basically the only income, way of raising income you have. I understand that. But we were promised 5 years ago, 6 years, David? 2001, okay, 12 years ago, whatever. But anyway, we were promised then that tax will be removed. And now this ordinance by the city council is shortcutting the county council to do it. Another thing, the tax has not been removed yet. Why are you instituting it before it moves? The point is, once it's done and you need the funds, when these assessments come in, if you really need the funds, this is the time that you have that discussion. This is the time that you would probably pick up a lot of support. But right now, you won't have that support. The people was promised this tax reduction. They should get it. If and when the case comes that you need the funds and you want to take that to the people, that we need this funds, we need this, we need that, fine. Present your argument, and you'll get a lot more cooperation than you are but coming back and saying, no, we're going to shortcut the county council. We're going to keep 0.15 of this. I just think it's inappropriate, and it's the wrong time. You got the cart before the horse.
Mr. Hall, it's okay. 2003. It's 2003. I was wrong. Not one, but three.
Yes, to answer a couple of your questions, first off, when they were looking at these other, what you say wouldn't cause anybody higher taxes, which you're wrong, we weren't looking at a $60 million cut in our AV. And there is nothing out there that is going to bring more money to this table to fund these budgets that isn't going to come out of somebody's pocket. You can say there was $350,000, we could have got it at no cost to anybody. That's not true. Somebody was going to pay that $350,000, and it just so happens it was probably the lower income citizens of this community. So to say that we passed up all these opportunities is not true. Again, back then we weren't aware that we were going to look at a $60 million cut in our assessed valuation. It's come to the point that these figures show this council is going to have to look at things, or we are going to have to start cutting services in this city. We don't have any option. We cannot keep running and going in the red, because eventually we're going to be broke. So with that, you need to look at every option available to you.
The thing that we need to keep in mind is what we do in the city of Vincennes. We're not an island, and it's done in the context of what is happening in the state of Indiana. To ignore that is to really ignore, you know, to ignore the important picture. As I said before, what the our state legislators and the governor have done to municipal government, not just here but throughout Indiana, is an assault. They are cutting taxes that are cutting our legs out from under us in terms of municipal governments being able to continue to provide the services that we need unless we act to come up with additional revenue. We know, at least I think I know, that the next session of the legislature is probably going to continue with this reduction in the personal property tax for business, and that's going to hurt us very much. We know that Indiana's experiment with financing government through river boats is becoming shakier by the day, because all the states around us woke up and saw the money that Indiana was making, and look, guess what? Illinois and Kentucky and Ohio are now retaining that money, and so our riverboat money is going down. And the cost of running city government is not going down. I would suggest that the net impact of the loss of the jail tax and the adoption of this tax is that the taxpayers in Knox County will have a reduction in their income tax. That should not be lost. But I would also suggest that the money raised will help us to maintain the infrastructure and employ people that are going to save lives. We're going to be able to patch holes in the road that's going to keep people from getting their car realigned every 6 months. They're going to pay a lot more money if we don't maintain our infrastructure than if we adopt this tax. So I think that just as we went out when we needed a swimming pool and went to the public and said, here's the choice. We close her down and that's it. Or you support us and we go forward and we provide that needed city service, 80% of the people said they wanted it. I think when the people understand the issues and understand these financial projections that we have to do something, they will understand and support us. So once again, I just ask that we vote for this tonight as a means to get this before us for full consideration. And I think we have a second.
Yes.
We have a second. So if I don't hear further discussion, I'd call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
No.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
First reading of Ordinance 31-2014 passes by a vote of 6-1.
Mr. President, can I add a clarification? Mr. President?
Yes.
Every March since 2012, Mr. Rager's office has met with the leadership of the council, the mayor, and myself. And that very first 2012, when they gave us a financial forecast for the next 5 years of the city, or 4 years, showed that in 2016, we were underwater in the operating balance. And everybody, there were eight copies of that distributed. So it's not like someone just turned the lights out. The lights have been going dim for a long time, and now we're around to where we need to do something about it.
Ready to move
on to 32.
Okay, next up is Ordinance 32-2014, additional appropriation from EDIT to pay HWC and SME.
Mr. Mayor, move we have first reading of Ordinance 32-2014.
Sorry. Motion.
Second. A motion. I'll make a motion to.
And we got a second. Well, second.
Yeah, I made the motion.
Okay, second. Okay. Sorry.
Got a motion by President Chatton, second by Councilman Clark, to have first reading of Ordinance 32-2014.
Ordinance 32-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3, $6,628.34.
Any discussion? What part of it is the HWC is the Riverwalk, and then the SME, that's money that we put out that we get 100% back through the grant that just helps identify properties that might have contaminants or brownfield. Yeah. It's no different. I mean, we've done
several, just
a couple new ones. Any other discussion?
Call.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
First reading of Ordinance 32-2014 passes by a vote of 7-0. Next up is Firefighters Local 664.
Hello, Justin Lowe, Vincent's Firefighters, Local 664. Thank you for allowing me to address you today about some of the concerns the Vincent firefighters have. It comes as no surprise to the firefighters of the 664 to hear the concerns pertaining to the Vincent's Fire Department budget. In fact, it now becomes a point of frustration. Frustration because firefighters have dealt with this with what seems to be an annual occurrence. I think it's a fair assessment to say each firefighter has had to evaluate his likelihood of being laid off because of council members, mayors, and even fire chiefs that have predicted an impending doom. Frustration because each time those firefighters at the bottom of our seniority list ask if their job is in jeopardy with emotion in their voice, emotion of fear and disappointment. Frustration because the firefighters have seen the writing on the wall for some time now. And for some time now, we have been trying to head this train off and get it on another track. And we have been the only ones to confront the problem at its core, to the detriment of some working relationships. But before I get into the nut of my speech, let me touch on some staffing issues that weigh on the firefighters. Currently, the Vincennes Fire Department is running a roster of 38 on-shift firefighters. This is short, five firefighters from our peak years ago. And we are under no illusions, 43 firefighters on the Vincennes Fire Department at this point in our city's history is highly unlikely. Short of this happening, the firefighters are eager to get back to the staffing levels of 39. This would allow 13 firefighters per shift. We do maintain a 10-man minimum staffing, which guarantees 10 firefighters daily from January 1st through December 31st. This is our most important number. Although it's below the guidelines of the National Firefighter Protection Agency for firefighters on a structure fire, we can and do work efficiently and productively with our 10 firefighters. The Vincennes firefighters are currently working with less, even in the daily roles of a missing officer position. We have been going without a training captain on one shift for several years now. This missing position has, I'm sure, added to the savings in our budget, but it has also deprived one firefighter from a promotion and the added pay increase from that said promotion. We are already working with less, and I fear that if any more positions or firefighters are attritioned, it will be to the detriment of the life and properties of Vincent's city residents, or to the lives and health of other firefighters themselves. Now, if I may, let me address some of the history. The local 664, under several presidents, has offered up several ideas for sources of income to aid in the deteriorating revenue of the fire department, only to be struck down and tabled, and the proverbial can to be kicked down the road to be dealt with by a different council on a different date. So I'd like to glaze over some of those ideas with you. First, and most likely one of the easiest to implement, is billing. In this scenario, certain runs like structure fires and vehicle accidents could be billed in order to be compensated for materials and supplies used during that run. This idea was discussed but never went any further. Next, LOIT, the local option income tax. This option would have benefited the Vincennes Fire Department, but it also would have benefited many other public agencies, public safety agencies countywide. This idea was tabled and never brought up again. This is still a very viable option, as we have discussed tonight. The 664 even entered into talks with VU in getting a surcharge on a per-student basis to augment our revenue. This idea failed to be administered for various reasons, but was only pursued by the local. Finally, the idea of running municipal ambulances. This idea was a joint venture between the previous fire chief and assistant chief and the 664. This idea seems to be the most lucrative one. Proactive cities all over Indiana maintain and run successful ambulances programs. Cities like Terre Haute, Fishers, and Carmel, and so on. And now, with Medicaid reimbursing government-ran ambulances, it may even be more lucrative. Previous officers of the local and firefighters have worked hard on these issues, spending of our own time and money. When time with family is precious and money, as you all are keenly aware, is hard to come by. In order to prevent such a thing as is happening right now. What strikes me odd is it's the union, the local 664, that is submitting nearly all of the ideas. And even with those ideas, they are being struck down. As if by some miracle things would fix themselves and the hard issues would not have to be dealt with. Now, to those hard issues. I learned a technique years ago for solving difficult problems called the five ways. Some of you probably are already familiar with it. This technique is used to explore the cause and effect relationship of any problem. And just as the name implies, one asks why five times to get to the chain of causality. For example, in our line of work, why is the traffic backed up? Because of an accident. Why is there an accident? Because a vehicle ran a stop sign. Why did they run the stop sign? Because a bush was blocking the stop sign. This example is simplistic in nature to illustrate to you the technique. But if you use this technique and apply it to the situation of the Vincennes Fire Department's budget, you will land on the root cause of the revenue issues of the city's department. Although all these ideas brought up by the 664 and ideas brought forth by you, the council, are good ideas and would assist in funding our fire department, it still doesn't get to the root of the problem. To solve this for the future of the fire department and the city, we have to get to the root of the problem, the tax base of the Vincennes Fire Department. It is confusing to look from the outside and see such polarization of two public safety departments of Vincennes, that being of the Vincennes Fire Department and of the Vincennes Police Department. Vincennes PD is running a full and complete roster as of my last inquiry. They are not confronted by impending budget shortfalls, and they are replacing officers as they lose them. Contrast that with the Vincennes Fire Department, and you would think you are looking at different departments from different cities. Well, in essence, you are. The Vincennes Police Department's territory lies to the extent of the boundaries of the city of Vincennes. Pretty simple logic and not confusing. Whereas the Vincennes Fire Department's protection area runs shy of the city's borders on all sides except for that of the Wabash River. This is illogical and confusing. The firefighters of Vincennes, when being sworn in, were charged with the protection of life and property of the cities of the citizens of Vincennes, and we are not meeting that obligation. We are not protecting 100% of the city of Vincennes. The details as to why this is happening is long, but understand there is legislation at the state level that protects Vincennes Township Fire Department from being annexed into. This now exists to protect a few fire departments statewide, but ours is the only situation where the protected department borders us on all sides, preventing us from expanding with our respective city. Let's make one thing clear. The Vincennes Township Fire Department and their fire chief, Tim Smith, is not our enemy. Chief Smith runs a good, proactive department. He is a smart man who works hard for his fire department and looks out for his firefighters. But the time has come where the existence of one fire department is choking the lifeblood of the other. As I touched on before, we are well below our peak roster. We are not filling critical roles such as that as training captain. We are cutting line items left and right, and we are being threatened of hurting other city services as a whole if we hire one position. This isn't right to be putting this burden on a service that protects citizens in emergency situations from residential structure fires to the falls of the elderly at 2 a.m. As the city of Vincennes grows its borders, so should that of its departments, water, sewer, police, and the fire department. The firefighters of Vincennes have sacrificed shoulders, knees, and backs. The firefighters of Vincennes have sacrificed birthday parties, anniversaries, and kids programs. We have sacrificed sleeping at night due to a structure fire that just won't give in. The firefighters of Vincennes bear scars, physical scars from cutting ourselves on bare metal at a wreck to burns from a fire, or emotional scars from medical scenes of loved ones to holding lifeless babies in our arms as we work frantically to save their lives. We do this willingly, and we do this more than willingly. We do it because it fulfills us to the core to help those in need. Ladies and gentlemen, we are firefighters. Let us fight our fires and run on our medical calls. That's what we do, and let us put our time towards that training and learning for that. Some of us may hobby in politics, but we're not politicians, and it is definitely not our chosen profession. We bring the ideas we have out of necessity, out of the sense that no one else will, but help us fix this problem. My plea, my call to action, is for you to work on the issue of the problem. Put money into a study to the merge of the two different departments. Proactively and openly work with Fort Wayne and Greenwood. Enter into legitimate dialogue with Chief Smith or the county government. Don't end this with just the shaking of your head saying this is a problem. This is the subject that cannot wait. Doing so will only invite the same conversation next year, the same newspaper article next year. Please understand, mine and our frustration is not with you, this council. It has been built up over years of threats, budget cuts, attrition, and struggling. Our desire, our hope, is to work at our chosen profession without the vision of a dark cloud over the Vincennes Fire Department, without the Vincennes Fire Department to be near or non-existent into the near future of our careers. We are looking forward into 15, 20, and 25 years into the future. We are looking for the future of the Vincennes Fire Department. So in conclusion, although all ideas that could bring revenue to the fire department are great, there is, in all honesty, a solution that may very well fix our situation. It'll be work. It'll take many meetings and may include many people, but the citizens of Vincennes deserve this to be resolved. Start with some of the prior ideas, but always keep working on the root of the problem and the duplicity of services to be eliminated. The firefighters will always be glad to work with you. Thank you for your time, and God bless.
Justin?
Yes.
Thanks.
Thanks.
And I hope you know that I've worked with you and Bo Meyer. Some of this isn't new to me or you, and I'll continue to work on things with you. I know that we've got issues we've got to face, and you're correct. I've worked on several of those issues you've just mentioned, or options, and we'll continue to work on them. And
I think it's came finally to the precipice, and it needs to be dealt with.
Do what?
I think it's finally come to the precipice of, right, you know, critical situation.
Like you said, unfortunately, this is something that's been seen coming for a long time. Been chosen not to be dealt with. I've tried to start dealing with this, and I'm going to continue to try to deal with it. But I'm glad you're here. I look forward to working with you and the chief and start getting things resolved. I want you at the table when we have to make the tough decisions of what it's going to take to keep the fire department up and running, and look forward to working.
Thank you.
So you say you're open to sitting down with Vincennes Township and coming up with, is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, we're open to a situation that resolves the budget shortcomings that have fallen us for so long now. Obviously, sitting down now, I mean, everything's on the table, so everything can be discussed. There's no, we don't know the end result now, but definitely we are open to discussions and sit down at the table.
I want to thank you also, and, you know, we have wrestled with many of the issues that you've talked about, and will continue to do so. But your remarks bring up a theme that was discussed earlier, and that is that sometimes the state makes decisions for local government, and quite frankly, they don't understand the impact on local government. And I doubt that the people that adopted the law that you referred to many years ago that constrains the city fire department could have envisioned where this would lead today. But it is a situation that is for the long term unsustainable, and so any way that we can work towards a solution of this is going to be beneficial to the protection of people's in terms of safety for fires, as well as the public employees that serve us so well. So we'll keep hammering away at it and look forward to hearing additional, you know,
we would love to sit down with the committee and work on any one of those issues. Well, it was brought up tonight, and that's definitely a viable issue that could help several departments.
I do have one question. You mentioned to fund a study to work with Fort Wayne and Greenwood, if I understood correctly. Are you aware that they are doing something that could benefit us? And
yeah, they're going judicially. They're similar in the situation we are, except they're not surrounded. They still have three sides available for them to annex into, but there is one department on each of their respective departments' corners, but they're working on that judicially to see if that legislation can be removed. But that's still, you know, I don't know how long that will take, but their situation is definitely not still as dire as ours, and they see the validity in going after it.
Good. Thank you.
Well, Thanks, Jeff.
Mr. President, as a fiscal officer of the city and talking about Vincennes City 2, Mr. Rager had a program one time where we were going to take COIT out of City 2. Everybody paid COIT, City 1, City 2. We were going to operate, let that contribute to the fire department, and because it raised the taxes on three or four people in City 2, it was turned down. So there are ways to do what you want to do, but we have to get the people to do what you want to do. And through that, through education and meetings and things like that, there's money out there to do that. Mr. Rager even told me a month or two ago that the ambulance situation in cities now can generate more money than it did back when you all had the test or the study done previously.
Yeah, Medicaid.
Yes, sir. So there are ways, like they're saying, we just need to talk about them.
Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
Next is stop light at 6th and Bustron. On or
I thought he was going to stand up here.
All
right. Well, sorry I don't have any exhibits. Okay. Or I'm very well dressed like Mr. Rolligan over there. Sorry for that. I'm probably the worst dressed person in this room. But today I wanted to discuss with you the stoplight over on 6th and Bustron. And it's becoming kind of a nuisance to my business. And I read in the newspaper at the beginning of the month that there was no formal complaints. And basically, I want to be here today to make a formal complaint to everybody so they can understand where I'm at. First off, I want to say that that idea, to me, was a great idea for us. I thought that was going to benefit Dairy Queen because more people will be passing. Actually, it probably changed the way people go about the city now in terms of where they're going to go from point A to point B. But the problem is that people can't leave my drive-through, and then people will get stuck there, especially around lunchtime, and it's becoming a very big nuisance to the degree that my service times are going up 45% around that time. People are getting stuck over coming into my drive-thru, and it's actually having a negative impact on the business. Secondly, as most of you should know, starting Tuesday of next week, we are going under construction, so I am actually projecting that the business right now is about 60-40 in terms of drive-through to eat in, and now it's probably going to be 90-10. So my drive-through is probably going to be my primary revenue source, and that stoplight's causing problems. And I understand, I mean, we've been talking about it all day, about the fiscal problems that's facing the city. I'm not asking you to put in a stoplight. What I'm saying is that there's buildup on 6th Street that's happening, and it's because of the trains, it's because of the stoplights. And if you guys don't realize, from Bustron Street all the way to Main Street, the average amount of cars that can fit there is like 12, and that's it. And then if a train comes through 6th Street and it backs up everybody, and everybody hits greens all the way through, that backs up where I'm at. And that's a problem. So, I mean, another thing that was brought to my attention was the Dairy Queen is in the TIF zone. So if that's a possibility that's on the table, I wouldn't mind a stoplight there. I mean, we look at 7th and Bustron, and that's a great success in my opinion. But 6th and Bustron is a headache to me. And I mean, if we could even change Main Street to a drive, like driving through it just like that, that would at least double the amount of people queuing up for the stoplight all the way to, is that Vigo Street, I think?
Right.
But I just want to bring it up in front of everybody that it is affecting somebody, and it is affecting a business in a negative way.
So if it was turned back on, you think it would?
At least whenever it turns back on, like, a little bit of sanity goes back to that corner there. Like, you say that there's no formal complaints. The problem is no one wants to go through the formal process of doing it. Right. If you go to Dairy Queen during lunch, actually, that was the biggest discussion for 2 weeks of how nobody knows how to drive through that stoplight. And it's only a matter of time, to be honest with you, whenever a situation happens where the police are trying to get out there and people are just speeding through that lane. I mean, that's a concern of mine the whole time. People stop all the time, and then, I mean, the police station is literally like 25 feet away from that stoplight. So I didn't want this to become like, what's it called? Me talking to you. I want this to be a conversation. I don't know.
I appreciate you.
I don't know the formal process.
Actually, it's under a 90-day trial.
Yes, I didn't realize that stoplight was in disrepair. I thought that they just wanted to move the flow of traffic going through there.
It's showing that actually, if you go by traffic studies, that light wouldn't be warranted, but that doesn't mean it has to be taken out. The other thing is that stoplight is so outdated, we can't hardly get parts for it for when it breaks.
Right.
I have been in talks with the city engineer about when we do get Second Street done, the light at Second Heart will be replaced. If we could take that, even though it wouldn't be new equipment, it'd be more up to date than what's at 6th and Buster now. Take that equipment and put it there and maybe get some more life out of
If that were the case, how long would the timeline be for that? Because I don't mind mind right now because it's going into low season. Summer is, even though it was hot as hell today, so summer is almost over. And that's my downtime. And that's the reason I'm going under construction is because we're going into the down part of the season. This is the time for me to try to reinvest back into my business. And then, but I mean, if you're talking about like a year from now, that's still a problem for me.
Right. This is actually after its 90-day trial that it'll come back to this council and they'll decide if that light's turned back on or not.
Okay.
The same way as 7th and Bustrin. That's been made a four-way stop.
Okay, so the traffic study, I have a question about because I've never seen it. And, I mean, I don't know if that traffic study took into account the fact that there's a high-velocity business there. And if you didn't know, I mean, my Dairy Queen, I agree, it's kind of slow whenever it comes to certain things. And it's because I want to make sure that everybody gets what they ordered and it's hot or it's cold, either one. But the problem is that if my service time keeps going up, I'm just going to lose business.
I want to make sure I understand the problem. You're saying because of the laws of the light that people can't exit the drive-through?
People can't exit and people can't get into the drive-through as well.
Oh, so it's both.
It's both ends.
It's not just an exit issue.
It's both ends.
Okay.
So and keep in mind, since that article in the paper...
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while, and I have had, since that article's been in the paper, I have had some people have issues with that intersection. A lot fewer than with the 7th and Bustrin change. So they have started to surface. I guess when you bring attention to it, like when the article was in there, some people said, you know, that they start talking to you and say, well, I don't care for it. And I've had a couple people say that. They don't know. It's like they don't know what to do.
Right. Well, see, the other problem is that the fear that I have is that even whenever everybody knows to drive through that stoplight, I still have a problem with people leaving my store. I still have that problem because you got to realize from my window to the street is probably 3.5 cars maximum can line up there. And it's pretty easy to queue up 3 cars in my drive-thru during lunchtime and then traffic just going left and right on 6th Street.
And if one of them's turning left, it's really...
Yeah, done.
You're done, right?
Yeah. And then, I mean, you know, people are very understanding for only so long. And, I mean, I am trying to operate a business within where I am at. And that's one thing that you guys are in control of, and I'm just wanting to make it aware that I really want you guys to try to help me out and work with me. I mean, I understand the situation, the stoplight, and the financing behind it, but I mean, I'm not even sure if we did a traffic study on Main Street, because actually that street's a three-way instead of a four-way. So I mean, that would make it like what, 25% easier? I don't know.
And those are being looked at too.
I'm not speaking for the council as a whole, but I can kind of feel everybody here. We don't want to be detrimental to any of our businesses in the city, and we're glad that you came to us tonight so we can, you know, this is addressed to us so we can look at this and fix this. I mean, we're going to be willing to do anything that we can to help benefit that, because, you know, small businesses like yourself, that's the lifeblood of the city. And the last thing we want to see is something detrimental happen to your business. So we're willing to look at anything and everything to help you out. And hopefully we can get this resolved.
Is this a Board of Works issue?
Things go to Board of Works, and then it comes to you at the 90-day trial.
After the 90-day, right.
Right, you can either... Right, as soon as Second Street's done. And at the end of 90 days, you can turn that light back on.
Right.
And then when we do the Second Street project, take that equipment. Yeah, that's, I've discussed it with the city engineer. The thing is, now if we replaced it with new equipment, we're probably looking at $100,000. So it would be better to wait till Second Street is done. Take that newer than what's their equipment and swap it out.
$1,000.
Just like control box and all that. I don't think you want to put waste on there. I don't think that would, I would just assume the light be turned back on. Do they have to wait the 90 days?
Yeah. It's up to the Board of Works. The Board of Works could say, this is not working, and revoke it. You don't have to ever submit it to the council if the Board of Works determines it's not working.
Okay.
So I guess my question to you guys is, what should I be doing now moving forward? Like, what do you want me to do? Do I need to go to the Board of Works meeting?
No, actually, you're talking to the Board of Works, so.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right.
I'll just, in 2 weeks, our next meeting. Is it 2 weeks, or are we got an extra? It'll come back up, and we can look at changing
that. Like, my main concern is the fact that I am starting construction September 2nd, and basically, with the limited amount of parking spaces I have and the construction crew moving in, I will probably have a total of like 6 parking spaces available. And so that's my main concern, because when you walk into the store, all you're gonna see is the front counter. You're not even gonna see the dining room, it's gonna be gone. And they're going to just tear that up and make it all new, so downtown's got something new.
All right, and I can tell you that unless we can do something before the next 2 weeks, if not 2 weeks, the Board of Works will relook at this issue and go from there.
All right.
Okay, so the maximum is going to be is 2 weeks.
I might also want to bring up the Blizzard sale's happening. buy one, get one 99 cents. So I'm also worried for that.
Okay. That's been the best news this evening. Thank you.
I can work on it.
All right.
But I guess that's all I have. I don't know if you have any questions. Nope. I mean, I've only vaguely looked into it, but I can tell you that my average service time is 3 minutes 45 seconds, and now it's gone up to 4 minutes and 25 seconds, something like that.
Good.
And then I do know that the hot times that I'm talking about are in between, well, it's actually in between the lunch, the $5 lunch thing, which is 11 to 4. So it's really like 11 to 2 is usually the time whenever that stoplight starts getting crowded. And then the problem is whenever those people from Illinois come in and just don't know what's going on, just stop. That's only a small sample size, but I would say it's about like 3 out of the 5 are Illinois plates.
For the record, we welcome the people from Illinois, however.
Okay.
How do they? I would think the people from Vincennes would be the ones stopping because they're used to a stop sign being there, and the people that don't come through there, they wouldn't stop because they don't know that there originally was a stop
sign.
Well,
whenever the stoplight first happened, I can tell you that Dairy Queen was the place to hear people saying stuff. Because people would watch. Actually, I think there's even a group of senior citizens that go in there and just sit there and watch the traffic for like 30 minutes, and they say it's better than TV, so.
They're hoping for action.
I mean, not. I wouldn't want to hope for an accident, but I mean, that's what they're just watching people and just like, look, that guy's stopping in the stoplight. That's funny.
Are they going to come back to your restaurant and patronize your business if we turn the light back on, or go somewhere else for entertainment?
I think the only benefit to the stoplight is the fact that it helps regulate traffic of people leaving. I mean, if you think about Hart Street, for instance, whenever you're trying to make a left on Hart Street, it's such a huge street to cross. That I know that a lot of people, whenever they're trying to turn left, going towards this way, away from Walmart, that they'll turn right and then go all the way down to Memory Motorplex, make a U-turn, turn left. I mean, it's kind of getting to that situation where people aren't wanting to make the left out of the drive-thru. They'll just go right, and it completely takes them off course.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Oh, we got claims.
Okay, next is claims.
I move that we pay claims totaling $822,056.09.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilman Sebring, to pay the claims in the amount of $822,056.09.
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Morris?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Yes. Mr. Salter?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
And claims are paid by a vote of 7-0. Okay. Nothing under miscellaneous, so I just need a motion to adjourn.
Two quick things. Council members, let me know if you want to have another meeting on Ordinance 31-2014, and if so, when, prior to our next meeting, or what additional information you need. And two, just a reminder that see me after the meeting if you plan to attend the IAC Annual Conference, September 9, 11, Fort Wayne. So now I'll move for adjournment.
We are adjourned.
All right.